Welcome. Welcome to the Promises Meeting. My name is Margo. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Would all who care to please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now we're going to turn the lights down and have a candlelight meeting. Tonight we will have 12 speakers sharing for 5 minutes each on one of the promises. None of them know in advance which promise they will be sharing on or what order they will be asked to speak. We have the 12 promises in one basket here and 12 speakers in another. I will draw a promise, I'll draw a speaker's name and then the speaker can pick their promise from the promise basket when they come up. And I've been asked to start off the sharing by telling how the promises have been fulfilled in my life. I'm Margo, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
And I want to thank God and OA for my life today. I first came into these rooms 25 years ago, last September, and I was a mountain of rage. I was out of hope and I couldn't stop eating. That's not the case anymore. And I remember, fortunately I got, direction to start studying the Big Book right away. And I remember when I first heard these promises, and I was just, I was inspired. I was filled up with hope anew. It wasn't in my first few meetings that I heard them, because I got hope right away in the first few meetings, just in a general way. I just felt like something, there might be help for me. But when I heard this, it was like poetry. It's so beautifully written. It sounds, it's lyrical, the way these read. And it assured me that I just have to read a little bit of it while I'm talking about them, because I just, the words are like music to me. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. And it's talking, this comes at the end of the ninth step. So I don't even have to be in maintenance, or it's going to happen really soon, it says to me here. And that, then it goes on, we will know a new happiness and a new freedom. Actually, I reversed that, new freedom and new happiness. And we will not regret the past. I wish to shut the door on it. Now, that seems so impossible to me, because I was filled with self-loathing. I was riddled with regret. I was only 31, for heaven's sakes, but, I just, my life and my way of living had brought me to my knees, and my attempts to avoid the pain of living had brought me, deep into an addiction that ran my life. And I was powerless, and I was helpless. And these promises came true as I started to work the steps and find a way out of that hopeless condition. And, we will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. I mean, oh my God. It's like, tell me more. I'm here. This, I think, really was what made me feel like this is a program that I can look forward to living, because it promised me these things. And no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. And my life was an exercise in futility before I got here. I didn't feel that it mattered what my experience was, but in these rooms, it totally matters. In fact, I was taught that's what I have to give, that's what I have to share. My experience in the disease and then my experience in recovery, which is what people really, what we really go to each other for, is that experience, strength, and hope in recovery. And that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Yes. And we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. And self-seeking will slip away. And our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. And then I love this one. Fear of people will leave us. I was so afraid of people, and I'm really not anymore. And fear of economic insecurity will leave us as well. And we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. What a beautiful promise. That's the best insurance anybody could offer me, that I would intuitively know how to handle it. And, you know, we will suddenly realize that God is doing these things that we could not do for ourselves. And are they extravagant promises? You know, no, we think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. That part was extremely reassuring to me. And after 25 years, I can say it's sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, because it is an ongoing program of living. And, you know, I hoped I would get to a certain place of self-actualization, and I certainly have, and I think I've lost track of how much I've transformed. But I continue to have to work these steps, and I continue to drop back into these things that I'm promised I'll be freed of. And that gets me back to the steps. You know, that's how the program keeps me coming back. And, you know, I make a little effort to keep coming back, but mostly my suffering that crops up when I get a little, you know, lax, or just get more deeply into my life, my everyday life, I start suffering. And that brings me back to working the steps and remembering that these promises are a reality. They have been. Sometimes they are realized quickly and sometimes slowly, but they always materialize if we work for them. So I'm not going to, of course, anybody who's been around a while knows it's a lot of work. You know, we work these steps. But in some ways, I feel like I do get more than I give. I work hard. Sometimes I feel sorry for myself how hard I work, and then I talk to other people in here and I feel better because everybody's working hard. But actually, I just work hard to not do self-destructive things, because as long as I'm working the steps, God's working all the rest of it for me. You know, it's not as hard as I think it has to be. I'm actually, it's one of my character defects. I'm a hard worker. And, you know, that's an asset too, but it's a liability when I try to think my way through. I don't muscle through, but I try to think it out, you know, and I work really hard at it. And a lot of times I just get more in more of a conundrum. But when I get back to the simple principles that are embodied in the steps, that it's really good to be powerless, because that's the first step, you know, and that hope is the second step right behind powerlessness. You know? And I just need to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, you know, and then work the rest of the steps. And, you know, I'm assured my defects, they won't be. Am I being timed? It seems like a long 5 minutes. And Darwin, you're signaling me. Is it time? He's nodding yes. I'm sorry. I hope I haven't gone over the time. It was kind of stretching out there. But it's wonderful to share on the promises. And now we have 12 speakers who are going to talk to us on each of the promises. And my instructions are to draw a name of a speaker. Our first speaker will be Michael N.
Sure. Pick my promise. All right. Hello, my name is Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hello.
And my promise says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. And, you know, that just says so much. You know, I came into this program close to 400 pounds and just also unable with all just an entirely unbridled form of eating. And the thing is that brought me to my knees wasn't necessarily just the weight, but was just the emotional weight that I had, because I had gone into my, even in the place of worship where I had worked and had played and performed and had done a good amount of service and work from on stage, and it came to the point where my addiction took me, where I couldn't even walk into the back door of where I was worshiping, and at the same time found myself in the back row finally. And it was on a Sunday morning when I felt as though I had no place to go, and that I made a phone call and an outreach call out to this radio show, and it was the screener on that show who basically said, you know, what you need is you need OA. You know, it's a place to go, and where you, you know, and it was amazing, because it was out of that disillusionment. It was on a Sunday morning, and I remember it as clear as day, and he said, you know, you'll find people there who'll get it, you know. And I was a very scared person. I said, thank you very much, and I more or less kind of hung up the phone, but I called back several months later, and the person had called, and I said, I'm ready. And I got down on my knees, and I said, you know, I'm ready to go. Because you know what, I was not living in service at all. And sure enough, the person said to me, you're ready to go to a meeting? Well, let me tell you what, I have some things to take care of at the station, and I'd like to meet you at your first meeting, you know. And the person, not knowing who I was out of all the kooks that call into Los Angeles talk radio, decided to take this guy by the hand and walk him in and 12-step him into his first meeting. And it was a beautiful thing, because during that point I was embraced and I saw other people being useful, and I thanked them profusely for their time. And the amazing thing of it was, is they said to me, you know, you don't understand, it helps me, you know, this helps me amazingly, that I can be useful in your life. And, you know, just a little bit of time, you know, came and went until I began to see that the newcomer was the lifeblood of this program, and that this program at any phase in my recovery could give me a context for usefulness. And it was then that, you know, and as time has gone on, I've had friends call, and I've called, and at the same time, it's been, as a friend of mine here in these rooms called, the great Pay It Forward program, you know, where I have a feeling of fullness because of my usefulness. And even during a period of relapse experienced somewhat recently, you know, I was heading off to meetings in the Berkshires of Massachusetts, and I had not seen some friends who were in my OA meeting there for, well, close to a year. And I called my friend Connell on the phone, and I said, you know, I'd like to come into this meeting. I said, but to be honest with you, I'm having a tough time, you know, making my way even into this room. And he said, why is that? I said, I guess I want to be an example of the program in many ways. He says, Mike, no matter what, he said, the second you step into that room, he says, you are an example of the program. Even if you are surely an example about how powerful this disease can be in your life, you know, and about how your recovery can start at day one and right wherever you are and right wherever you can begin. And right there, it was though 150-pound weight was just taken off my back, you know, and I just found a new blessing, you know. And no matter where I've been, I still have the privilege of the phone, and I've had the privilege of friends in this program who will not leave me alone, and who I can call, and I'm just sitting here, I'm looking at the glow in some of their faces, and it's just it's a candle. It is a candle. It is. You know?
too, which, you know, bolsters me up so often. And but, you know, even so, the great thing about usefulness in this program is that I remember sitting in an AA 12 and 12 study when we studied the AA 12 and 12, and it talked about how we learn the principles of this program and we commence to take the things that we've learned here and we give them to others. And it says how we will bring, how our life will be of service, you know, how we can be of service to others, you know, out of this program. And I'm just grateful that today that feeling of uselessness is disappearing. And I look for it to disappear even in greater measure. And thank you for being part of my life. And thank you for letting me be part of your life. Because I owe God, and I owe to God and this program my thanks. And it's a privilege to be amongst you all tonight.
I'm going to call our next speaker. Because it's such a peaceful and quiet meeting, if our speakers could kind of keep an eye on Darwin back there. He's going to raise a candle and go like this for time.
Can you sit closer so we can see you? Can you be in the front row?
I think when you're standing here, you'll find he's right in the line of sight there. Let's see how Nancy Lee does it then.
Oh, thank you.
My name is Nancy Lee, and I'm powerless over food.
Hi, Nancy.
So you're going to give me assignment 5?
Yes.
Thank you. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I think one of the first experiences of freedom that I had after getting abstinent was the freedom to look people in the eye. And when I think about that now, it's an indication to me of how ashamed I was of my eating. OA was the first place where I really was able to develop a healthy relationship with food. I'd been trying to control my eating since I was 9 years old. And OA was the first place where I was actually able to eat the way I wanted to eat. Which is in moderation. And I've been blessed after many years of having abstinence and not having abstinence, and I finally have long-term abstinence, which is something when I was in relapse that I never thought I would have. I thought I was going to be getting 2 weeks here and 30 days there for the rest of my life. And today I have 14 years of abstinence. Thank you. Someone suggested to me a while back that I read the promises every day, and that was a while ago. I haven't done that, but I think I'm sort of in it for the promises. The physical part of this disease and this recovery has become relatively easy for me. It's not that hard for me to not eat compulsively. But the spiritual and emotional recovery is a great challenge to me. And it comes and goes. And I think it's very difficult for me to work these steps. More difficult than it is for me to not eat compulsively. Particularly the ninth step, that is one of the hardest steps for me. But you know what? I just haven't given up. And I haven't given up in the same way that I didn't give up, you know, after 11 years of being in and out of relapse. I really believe that if I make my amends, that I'm going to feel better. And I want to feel better, so... I had the opportunity to make one the other day, which was really a blessing. I had gone to this massage school to get a massage, and the young woman who massaged me was just kind of anxious and not very confident, and I sort of responded to that with impatience and didn't really enjoy the massage that much, and so after. Words, you know, they have these evaluations for you to fill out, and that's basically, I was a little hard on her. Thank you. And that may seem like a small thing, and I could probably get 10 people on the phone who would tell me, oh, that's nothing to worry about, but I felt bad about it, and so I had the opportunity to make an amends to her, and she worked on me today, and she gave me a great massage, so. that's not one of the promises, though. Anyway, thank you all, and happy holidays. Murray. Where's Murray?
We want Murray.
Murray.
Pick your promise, Murray.
I'm Murray, I'm a compulsive overeater. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I knew I'd get the hardest one. Not really. I suddenly get that realization at the oddest times, and usually it's at the back end of some issue or some problem or some event or something that and I realize, gee, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I also know that when I was going through those kind of situations before, I would eat over them. And what I know is I would withdraw from the world. That's the way I dealt with things for the most part. And today I don't do that. And God works in my life and is doing something and that I couldn't do for myself. And you know, the biggest example is my abstinence, right? That's the number one example. I could not do that for myself. I couldn't do it by myself. I couldn't stop eating. And one day at a time now, and when I'm in a fit spiritual condition, God helps me be abstinent. He requires some action on my part from time to time, but I'm willing to take that action, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to the program, and I'm grateful to God for my abstinence. I'm trying to think of a good example recently where I realized it was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I'm not coming up with one that's off the top. I just remember the feeling or the I can remember that I have experienced that. And but the best example I can think of is my abstinence. I mean, my relationships with people, places, and things is in fact, relating to all the promises, that I couldn't relate to them in any kind of healthy and straightforward way before program. I isolated for a good portion of my life. And when I wasn't isolated and I was out in the world, I was sort of a jolly fat man. That's the way I got through things. But that was no relationship at all. That was another way of putting up a wall. It was the food and the isolation that I recall so vividly. And I'm not there anymore. I think, you know, everyone that's going to stand up here today is going to say something, I'm not there anymore. And I'm grateful for that. I also I also recognize the fact that I'd be dead without this program, and that daily reprieve from compulsive overeating enables me to live a life. You know, 5 3/4 years ago, I was, you know, a walking poster boy for congestive heart failure. And although I'm living with some of those remnants today, I'm reasonably healthy for an old person. I'm sorry, something funny just came to mind. It doesn't relate to the promise too much, but talking about being old, wasn't too long after I was dating my girlfriend for a while, and this is late at night after being out to dinner and a movie or something, but you know, it was 11 o'clock or something at night, and we were walking into a drugstore together. You know, young people walk into a drugstore, what are they after? Condoms. We were in after extra strength gas sex. That's the difference. But anyway, Darwin is waving that thing at me, and I want to thank you for your time.
Jerry.
If I don't like it, can I put it back? I don't like the mind. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. What's so funny? Oh, boy, where is everybody? Oh, I see one glowing face. Oh. I'm Jerry, a compulsive overeater.
Jerry.
Hi, everybody. Everyone that's shared so far. Honest and as humble as they have, and I don't need to be a showman, okay? Our whole attitude and life, outlook on life will change, and so will that microphone. Thank you. Well, August 8th, 1972 was my entrance into OA at 350 pounds, and I got up to a high of 400 pounds within OA. And I would say in the last 12 years, I've been approximately this weight now at about 205 pounds. So I've been holding about 195 to 200 pound weight loss for the last 11, 12 years. And that in itself is a different outlook on life. My whole attitude, you know, just forget the steps for a second, and I'll say just for a second, has changed. A little bit of the self-esteem has come back just from some weight loss. Because to be a 400-pound man was no promise to live any type of a decent life for me. And I shared a couple of weeks ago at the what was the name of that meeting? Light a Candle. No! Was it? Oh, yeah, Light a Candle. This is also Light a Candle. Again, this is Promises. And I talked about how in January, after the birthday party last year, I found out that I had cancer. And I had colon and liver cancer, stage 4. And the old me would have said, you know what, let me do this my way. I'm not worried about it. Things will get better, just like I did with the food before I came into OA. I don't need this diet. I know how to do this. Well, learning how to, you know, cope with the disease for the last 34 years, I immediately listened to what I needed to do. And to fill, you know, to make this real quick, I followed directions, just like if somebody told me I needed to work the tools or read the steps, I treated it just like the disease of compulsive overeating. And November 18th, which is 10 months to the day from when I found out, they gave me a full clearance of a stage 4 cancer. My whole attitude and outlook on life did change. Things that would normally bother me, you know, some things still do, but when you think you're going to be dying, which they told me if I didn't go through with this surgery, I have 6 months to live. That's how far advanced it was. That, you know, little grievances, little petty crap that goes on in my mind. Why did that person roll their eyes at me that way? Or what did they mean when they... It's sort of like, you know, not to be cocky about it, but it's sort of like rose above it all, thinking that, you know, I wouldn't want to leave this society of people that I've known for years for something petty. You know, there's people that I dislike, but I must say that every person I've ever run into in the last 34 and a half years, some of them I dislike, but I truly love every single one. I would not want to see anyone ever leave over a personality. The principle for me is to stay well in all my affairs, not just in with my weight, but to learn to live in society. I just took on a little boy, 9 years old. My son is now in Barcelona. He's my only living relative. He's 22. He's teaching English out there. And we're closer than ever, and now I realize how much I love children. I just took on a little 9-year-old boy as a mentee through the Santa Barbara Public School District, where I live up in Santa Barbara. My whole attitude and outlook on life has changed. It's not just all about me anymore. I want to give back what was so freely given to me, and that's to be living a healthy, productive life, feeling as though I have something to share. I really wanted the one that says, which one was nice, and I want to leave one. But this one seems great, you know, it seems so apropos. Oh, I think I was joking. I want the one that says, oh, these extravagant promises, because it's not a promise, it's a question. I never believed in promises before. I mean, my alcoholic father, may he rest in soul, rest in peace. He made plenty of promises, but as we know, people that are addicted cannot keep a promise. Today, I'm able to keep promises to myself, which is the most important thing. I trust what I say to myself today. My attitude is different. Much different. Many of you know me from many years ago. I know people here for the many years, like the guy back there that's waving his hand with the... Oh, that means that I'm up. Okay. So thank you for letting me share.
Eddie.
Thank you. I'm Eddie, compulsive reader. Thank God for the absence I have. See all these candles in the dark. I feel so sexy. Oh, we fear people will leave us. let's see. I'm really glad. Thank you for asking me to speak. it's a great way to get out of myself. I really appreciate that. I like the acknowledgement that that you know put this in context of where it is in the big book, these promises. It's halfway through the ninth step is what they're suggesting. And at the end that it says, you know, they'll happen if we work for them. And, you know, fear of people will leave us. Well, making amends is scary. And I think about one in particular I had to make to my father. And, you know, it was really scary, you know, because, you know, I could certainly, to an outside person, very righteously cast a lot of blame on him for our relationship and what happened in my life because of actions he took. But working the steps, you know, I don't regret or close the door on any of that stuff. All that stuff is true. I can't change it. What is it I heard somebody say once? I'm hopeful for my past and nostalgic for my future. but by working the steps, I had to take a look at what I brought to the relationship, you know, that made it so difficult for me. And, you know, once I took that inventory and you know, really saw, you know, took a look at what it is that I do in a relationship, specifically with my father, using that as an example, you know, I had to follow through, you know, in the ninth step and make amends. And for my actions, you know, my behavior, to take responsibility. And, man, that's scary. You know, to sit down with my dad and say, you know, look, I know I did this. I do this in our relationship. I have done this in our relationship. And I know that it hasn't been a positive thing, you know, and I just want to take responsibility for it and acknowledge that and make my amends and say I'm sorry. And that... you know, to the best of my ability, I won't do that anymore. And the weight that was lifted from me that I didn't even know I was carrying, you know, was really quite noticeable. And I think it has resonated then in how I relate to other people. You know, I believe that, you know, because... You know, look, I teach. I teach a class in the profession that I pursue. And that entails dealing with a lot of people. You know, talking to people, getting to know people, standing up every week and helping people. And the disease, forget about it. And I want to also qualify, because this was important to me when I came in, you know. I have a little over 8 years of abstinence, and I'm maintaining 65-pound weight loss, which is not, which is not my top weight. I've been almost 100 pounds heavier than I am now, and you know, my abstinence is I have 3 meals a day, no sugar, no flour, no bread. I also abstain from chips, potatoes, red meat, and pork. Those are my alcoholic foods. I don't have a sober relationship with those foods. And when I have been in the food like that and fat, I don't want to deal with people. I don't want to put myself out there like that. And I'm not living like that today. you know, and so it is a program of action, and over the past 8+ years, I have been taking the actions that have been suggested to me, and without, you know, going for the result, so to speak, of the promises, you know, but doing the actions and showing up and committing to my abstinence in this program, the promises have been dawning on me, you know, and they've been manifesting in my life in unexpected ways. And sometimes it catches me by surprise. And just because, you know, like fear of people will leave us, it doesn't mean like I'm branded with this promise and it's always there, you know, but I can say, I'll wrap it up, I saw the candle, I can say that, you know, when it has occurred in my life day to day, I'm aware like, oh, this is new, you know. So I'm really grateful to be here and thanks for letting me share.
Hey everybody, my name is Kristen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I don't know why I knew I was going to get that one. I'm really glad to hear the previous speakers talking about step 9. I was in OA probably close to 10 years before I realized that the promises came after step 9. I thought that they were talking about, you know, before we're halfway through the steps, which in my mind meant before step 4, which is why do I need to do step 4 if I'm going to get these promises? It was really amazing to me to realize that the promises were linked to step 9. In fact, there's 7 pages in the big book preceding the promises that talk about step 9 and how to do step 9 and how to approach it and what frame of mind and how important it is and, you know, what to do. So I think that the promises in context with that are even more profound because it's so risky to do step 9. At least it was for me. It was a very frightening proposal. And, you know, I had very few people on my list. I was one of those people who hurt myself rather than to lash out at other people. And so there weren't that many actual amends to do, but there was so much shame surrounding those people that I had to make amends to, and it was just a cloud that hung over my head, and so we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it is really amazing because, you know, before I made my amends, I had so much shame that just kind of followed me along like a cloud, like that Peanuts character, you know, Pigpen, you know. It was just all this shame that just kind of followed me around. And I knew why. I mean, I had just recurring bouts of waves of shame, you know, and memories of these incidences that, you know, I had misbehaved in or whatnot, and the shame was deserved, you know. So when I finally made my amends, it was an incredibly profound experience. The amends themselves were unbelievably profound, and there wasn't one person who wasn't unbelievably forgiving. But it was after that that was really amazing, because that cloud of shame disappeared. And in fact, those daily reminders of my misdeeds disappeared. And my memory of those misbehaviors is so much more of just a memory. You know, it's not that visceral, daunting shame that makes, you know, me shrink. And I can forgive myself and have forgiven myself. You know, I've arrived at a state of forgiveness for those misdeeds and misbehaviors. And my experience with step nine has, you know, been something that I've been able to carry into my sponsoring relationships with other people and with other compulsive overeaters, be able to share about this. I don't know how much more time I have, but I want to share, you know, really quickly an amend that I had to make. When I was in grade school, when I was in grade school, I was picked on tremendously, and one of the bullies I was trying to get off my back told me that she would, you know, leave me alone if I would beat up this other girl who was, you know, I was just one step above her on the pecking order, and you know, so I couldn't even defend myself, let alone beat somebody else up. But you know, me and the bully cornered her after school, and you know, I kind of shoved her around a little bit, and you know, said some nasty things and whatever. And I've got to tell you that that was really the most shameful thing that I had on my list, because I perpetuated the abuse that had been perpetrated upon me. And at my 20th high school reunion, I ran into her. And I was hoping to. I was ready with my amends. That was not the appropriate place to do that, though, so I held off, and I got her phone number, and I called her, and I took her out to coffee. My sponsor told me to take her a gift, so I took her an orchid plant, and I made my amends to her. And, you know, she was so utterly appreciative, not because she didn't even remember the incident at all. She had no recollection whatsoever of what had happened. But she'd been tremendously abused by her father in her life, and she no longer had any kind of association with him. And, you know, she thanked me, and she appreciated my effort, and she told me that she felt like she had some kind of healing for that. And I don't know how that those two instances could be associated at all, but that somehow brought her some feeling of healing. And you know what? For all of my fear of doing my ninth step, every risk that I took, that I felt that it was a risk to take my ninth step and do that, it all, in that one amend, it all was all paid off. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank you. Yeah.